Welcome back to the Golf Shop. Mark Greenhalgh, Mike Fraschina, and this segment's brought to you by Greater Golf Express. Greater Golf Express has Odyssey Versa putters for only $89. Inventory is limited and won't last long at this price, so get them while they last. Check them out online at greatergolfexpress.com. All right, well, joining us now, we have the author of a great-sounding book, Birdies, Bogeys, and Bipolar Disorder, The Fight Against Mental Illness on and Off the Green, Mr. Michael Wellington. Michael, welcome into the Golf Shop.
Gentlemen, it is truly a pleasure. I'm coming down your way to North Carolina at the end of October. I cannot wait to get down there and tee it up in some of the finest golfing areas in this country.
Awesome, awesome.
Well, we love anybody who opens with a little brown nosing. Good job. A little regional brown nosing. Good for you.
Thank you.
Well, we kind of teased this in our last segment that this isn't a funny book. This is a very serious book. And the title would lead somebody to believe, hey, you know, don't all golfers have some kind of bipolar disorder in them just because of all the mood shifts that we can have while we play? But this is something that you had to deal with and that puts you through the ringer. Just kind of give everybody a little taste of what the book is about and what kind of impacts it had this disorder had on you.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting thing. I will say the book does have some funny things in it now that I look back on them. But at the time, I think a lot of the things that were going on with me were not so funny. And I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder in 2001. I had just gotten out of college, was getting ready to start a professional golf career, and was diagnosed literally about a month out of college. And to be honest with you, fellas, at the time, I didn't know what bipolar disorder was. I had never heard of it. I had never heard people talk about it. I guess I just wasn't very open to listening about it, you know, when I was supposed to learn about it in school. And, yeah, you know, it's a challenge. You know, when things are going bad, it's a challenge. And when things are going good, you know, you never felt much better. But, you know, the one thing about bipolar is that it's very manageable if you use the right tools. And that's why I put the book together. I think the tools that I provide at the end of the book, which I call my 14 clubs, which is obviously a reference into 14 clubs as a tournament golfer. You're only allowed to use 14 clubs. You know, I put those together in addition to the story of the journey because I figured, you know, a lot of people need some help with this bipolar. It can be confusing. It can be mysterious. It can be just flat out odd. There's not a lot of rhyme and reason to some of the things that happen, but like I said, it's very treatable and manageable if you handle it the right way.
Well, and you know, millions and millions of Americans are currently, you know, battling some form of mental illness, from social anxiety disorder to, you know, to bipolar, I suppose. And what you've got is a booming industry of pharmaceutical options and things like that. And for you, like you said, you went through college not even realizing that these highs and lows that you were feeling were an actual, you know, problem for you. And, you know, the idea of explaining to someone the difference between, you know, someone who typically has mood swings, we all know moody people, and the drama and the how awful it is to go from being manic to depressed. Can you sort of give us a daily sense of what that feeling was like for you before you learned to manage it?
Yeah, of course. That's a great question, and it's a very important question. You know, a lot of people aren't exactly sure about the mania and the depression and how they work, and you just brought up an interesting point that kind of turned on a light for me. You know, when you're bipolar, these things go in waves. They go in, like, two-week stretches or three-week stretches. It's not what a lot of people, at least in my experience, it's not what a lot of people think, like every single day is different. You know, it's kind of like golf. Like you get on a roll, you make some birdies, you make some pars, you're going good, and then you turn to the back nine and, you know, you make a couple bogeys and you got to gather yourself. And, you know, it's more of a streak or a stretch of time. You know, I struggled a lot in the first 5 years of my illness battling with the mania. You know, I was very lucky. You know, I was outside playing golf a lot. I was competing and I didn't have a lot of the depressive issues that I would encounter later, but early on in my so-called bipolar career, the first 5 years, I really battled the mania. And what the mania is it increases your speech. You talk really fast. You go on ridiculous spending sprees, buying things that you have no reason buying. You can stay up for 2 weeks at a time. I mean, I remember there was a stretch in 2005 when I promise you that I didn't get more than an hour a night of sleep for a three-week stretch. And you know that 1 hour is not going to be any good anyway. But the problem with the mania is that even though you have all those things going awry, you feel so amazing. I mean, it's unlike any other drug that I've ever tried, whether pharmaceutical or, you know, under the table that I tried in college. I mean, you know, the drugs out there today are very potent, and I use the drugs to help my mania now. But the feeling of the mania when you're on a high is it's unbelievable. It's a feeling I wish I could share. But the problem is when you have that feeling going all the time, you don't rest your body properly. You even forget to eat and you forget to drink enough water. I mean, the mania, even though it feels so euphoric, it can set you into a tailspin. And I had that happen on about a half a dozen occasions, to be honest.
Well, we're talking to Michael Wellington, author of Birdies, Bogeys, and Bipolar. And Michael, my personal experience with bipolar, I lived in an off-campus apartment in college that was really provided for me at a great deal by a sports booster. And because I got such a great deal, one day he called me and said, "Hey, I got a buddy who is, you know, he's divorcing his wife and he needs a place to live." So he set this guy in to live with me. I didn't know he was bipolar. I didn't know anything about it. And it was frightening at times. I mean, and I didn't understand it at all. So when he was down, he would be way down. We're talking about days of not leaving the apartment.
Sure.
And then when he was up, the spending thing as his roommate, I was a 19-year-old college student. I had 4 electric can openers that he bought for me. And I just didn't know what was. I'm from Boston. I had cowboy boots.
That's a lot of Chef Boyardee.
I know. When he would go, he just went, and there was no sort of. He had no rumble strips at all when he was manic.
Yeah.
And you know, at first I didn't understand it, and then I tried to understand it, and it ended up. I couldn't empathize, but I could sympathize with what he was going through, and it was just. I can't imagine doing that. And sort of enjoying the, like you say, the euphoria of that mania. So, you know,
right.
You must have been great at parties. But
yeah,
but
I was
you
outstanding.
Can't, yeah,
I'm
but
not
you,
lie.
You can't sustain it. It's not healthy.
Right, so, you're exactly right. And I would imagine that in that particular case, it had to be unnerving to you because, correct me if I'm wrong, you didn't know this man from Adam. He just was assigned to you as a roommate?
Yeah, I just took him on into this extra room that I had in this off-campus apartment because I was doing the landlord a favor. And he was like 30
sure.
years older than me, too. So that didn't help.
Did he drink?
Yes. Occasionally.
Okay, well, that leads us to the most important thing that, if anybody learns anything from me being on your show or me doing any other interviews or anything from this book, alcohol is absolute poison into the bipolar mind and the bipolar body. I can't emphasize enough. I mean, the reason I was able to get myself straight and write the book and start our charity were because I quit drinking. I mean, alcohol is like throwing gasoline on a fire with a bipolar person. And you saw it up close, obviously.
So let me ask from a medication and managing this standpoint. Number one, I mean, are the medications? I mean, can you play a professional sport on these medications? Do they clear whatever testing that they want to do, or do you have to present can you actually see somebody on the PGA Tour playing with bipolar disorder?
Well, I know from my research, and I played with him at Q School in 2007, Stephen Bowditch has had some bouts with depression, and I don't know if he's been diagnosed with bipolar, but I know he's been doing some great work with people who are battling depression back in his homeland of Australia. So I know that Stephen is a good pioneer for guys, you know, that are trying to play professional golf because he's been a great example. I would assume that, you know, his meds are conforming with all PGA Tour policies and rules. I mean, you know, that's a great question. I don't know the entire answer, but that's kind of the best I could tell you just from reading about him. And I think that the medication I take, which is lithium, I take 900 milligrams of lithium every morning. I don't miss it. It's part of my routine. It's like my pre-shot routine. It's my pre-day routine. And I know I'm pretty sure that drug would pass the PGA Tour policies as well because it's a salt that just dissolves naturally in your body. There are some other drugs that I've tried to battle the bipolar that, did not sit well with my body. I took a drug called Depakote that made me vomit. Now, that was just my case. I know many people that have bipolar that take Depakote and are doing just fine. But, you know, as far as the policies of playing professional sports, I mean, I'm sure – I know there's other athletes and other, you know, sports that have bipolar that are playing sports at a high level. So I think that I would imagine that those kind of drugs are going to help your, you know, your mental focus. So they would encourage that. I mean, I don't know if it would enhance your physical performance. But that's an interesting question. Well, I'll have to find out more about that.
Well, and part of that, though, is could you envision yourself being on the PGA Tour and would the stressors of the PGA Tour cause issues despite the medication, I guess, is kind of where I'm going.
Maybe so, but I have a feeling that when you get to the PGA Tour, the stress is a little bit less than it is when you're playing the Tar Heel Tour or the Hooters Tour or any of those other tours.
Because you are playing for a lot of money.
Right. But, I mean, a fair question. Certainly a fair question.
Well, Michael, as you went through the process of writing this, I'm sure a lot of it was self-discovery, and it was probably very, you know, healthy for you to look at your own story. When did you realize as you were doing this that this was something that could help a lot of people? When did this go from a personal journey to something you said, oh, my goodness, this story, this anecdote, this data, this story needs to be told worldwide?
Well, I'll tell you, it all started. I was in a very, very depressed place in October of 2011. I had just missed advancing through the first level of the tour school by a shot. You know, I was broke. I was not real healthy. I was still drinking, still staying out too late, still chasing too many girls. And I was not well, fellas. I was probably in a close to a suicidal state. I don't think I was that close, but I was bad. And the Cardinals in 2011, if you remember, won the World Series, mm-hmm. and they came back in Game 6 from David Freese and Lance Berkman. And that, you know, being a kid from St. Louis and watching your baseball team do that, never say die, never give up, always go till the last pitch or the last out, or in their case, a couple times, the last strike. That 2011 World Series just kind of turned my world around. I kind of became inspired, and I decided I was going to quit drinking, and then I decided that I was going to write the book. I had been a journalism major in college, and frankly, I hadn't really gotten anything out of that journalism major. So I decided to write the book, and I knew the golf audience would carry the book all along. I did some research. I found out, you know, two of the top five sports books of all times were golf books, one being Mr. Penick's book. And I just knew the golf audience would carry it, and I knew that the mental health audience was getting bigger. And then I wrote the first five chapters in about 4 months, and I went back and I did editing on my own. I was actually the editor of my college newspaper, so I had a little experience with writing and editing. So I went back and I read those first five chapters, and I just couldn't believe that I was still alive. I mean, the things that I had, the close encounters that I had had that really, really almost took my life a couple different ways, a couple different times. And then once I got about half, the book is nine chapters. So once I got through five chapters and I went back and I edited, and I realized that, you know, I'm lucky. I have this great support system of my family and my friends. And, you know, I know there's people out there that don't have that support system. And I thought that the book may be able to provide that support if you don't have the people necessarily behind you. And that's the only reason that I was able to write the book and talk to you guys about this today is because I have my family and my friends behind me. I've been lucky to make a lot of friends, not just in my hometown, but all over the country, just from playing golf and traveling. And, but I think, you know, to be able to, kind of turn things around in 2011 and, you know, it took me a year to write the book. It took us a year and a half to pick a publisher. And then it took, you know, another year to put the editing and the cover together. So it took us about almost three and a half, four years to finish the entire project. And I'm really proud of it. I mean, I think my publisher out of Austin, Texas, Greenleaf Book Group, did a great job with the cover. And their editors were just sensational. I mean, they made my job so easy. So, you know, I think 2011 was a big turning point for when it all the tide kind of changed for me.
All right. Well, Michael, we're up against it. Where can people get the book real quick?
Amazon.com.
Amazon.com. Birdies, Bogeys, and Bipolar Disorder. Michael, we appreciate you coming on with us tonight.
Fellas, anytime. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. That's Michael Wellington.
fascinating.
We'll be right back. Mark Greenhalgh, Mike Fersina, you're listening to the Golf Shop Radio Network.